It's Sound Effect on KPLU. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and here's the sound of the week's top stories.
We had to euthanize about 85,000 juvenile coho in order to preserve the health of the fish that we are still keeping.
The tenets of Project Peace are trust, relationships, and understanding.
Their planning is not good. They have too much development going on at one time. It wasn't thought out well.
The Oso landslide killed 43 people. The recent court ruling says the families cannot sue under the state's Growth Management Act or the Forest Practices Act.
You know, when you've been asked to go over and you talk to people about the great state of Washington, you try to get up to invest, and then the people that are putting the conference together are ripping them off.
We saw the drought claim new victims this week. Police in Seattle and Tacoma are struggling to cope with gun violence. And we had plenty more angst over growth. But as always, lurking behind these headlines were a bunch of overlooked news stories. Well, overlooked no more. Here to catch us up on the week's underreported stories are Hannah Brooks Olson of Seattle-ish. Josh Feit is news editor at Seattle Met Magazine and founder and editor of Publicola. And Emily Parkhurst is digital managing editor for the Puget Sound Business Journal. Welcome back to Sound Effect, everybody.
Hi. Morning.
Thanks.
So we're going to dig right into our undercovered stories now. Emily, why don't we start with you? What do you have for us this week?
So this week was a really interesting week for the development community. The real estate development community had Lobsang Dargi, who's a developer from Tibet, was charged by the Securities and Exchange Commission with fraud. Allegedly, he has defrauded about 250 Chinese investors who have participated in the EB-5 immigrant investor program. And allegedly, he was taking some of those funds that they had given him for a couple of projects, one in Seattle and one in Everett, and using those funds for a couple of other projects that he had underway, in addition to buying himself a house and also visiting some casinos. This is all allegedly.
And this is a civil investigation at this point.
It is. It is. There are no criminal charges as of yet.
This is a crazy story. There's so many pieces of it, right? You have this Tibetan monk turned real estate developer. You have Chinese investors, which tells that part of the bigger story of development in Seattle. You've got potentially fraud or civil malfeasance of some kind. You got projects that are stopping in the tracks. Explain that bit of it, like, because he has some big projects underway that are now imperiled.
He does. The one in Everett is pretty much done, so they should be pretty much in the clear, I suspect. But there is a high-rise in Belltown. The assets have been frozen, so that project is almost certainly going to be delayed if it happens at all. There's also a project down near the Othello light rail station that is in serious jeopardy, mostly because his assets are frozen. And that project was a 500-unit apartment complex. It would have been a really great thing down there. A farmer's market included in it. Just a really beautiful development right in a really, you know, a part of town that could really use something like that. And I know that they were very excited down there about that development. So that's all come into question.
Okay, well, you said some of the money went to him. Didn't, like, a lot of them?
I feel it's like, about $11 million.
Yeah, it's a substantial amount of money that he has allegedly been siphoning off.
It is. I mean, it's $11 million of $125 million.
That's a decent percentage.
It is. It is. It is absolutely significant that he was using that money for different projects, too. With the immigrant investor program, you know, it's very clear that the money that those investors give have to go to those projects, and those projects have to be cleared through a lot of different channels in order for that to happen. The fact that he was using them for different projects is very important.
All right. Well, that's a crazy soap opera. Appreciate you bringing it to our attention once again, Emily Parkhurst. How about you, Josh Feit? What you got for us?
I think the most underrated story this week is the Eco District in Capitol Hill, which is basically a neighborhood group. I like that they're reclaiming the term neighborhood, because when we think of neighborhood groups, we think of the people that basically shot down the Hala recommendations for tweaking the single-family zoning all throughout the city. And this is actually a dense neighborhood that is trying to establish a model for the way a neighborhood could be. And they made several recommendations to city council that were well-received, the most prominent one of being a shared parking concept, which is to basically view all the parking facilities within a neighborhood as one parking garage. And what that does, it deals with a problem that people have identified, which is that there's these high vacancy rates in parking lots. So up to 30% in the evening, 70% during the day. And so there's a way to sort of say, hey, look, this is a shared asset we can all use. And again, it was well received by council.
I'm not sure I totally understand the shared parking concept. How would that work exactly?
Sure. There's a lot of pieces to it, a lot of moving pieces. The general idea is to give people exemptions from parking taxes if they use this program. And the program is that people that live in the neighborhood can all use what is currently private parking. People that come to the area during the day to shop can park there. And basically, so again, I think the simplest way and the way the report, they did a 58-page report on it, but the way they described it was, think of the parking facilities as one parking facility. And so again, it makes up for this. I mean, it's a surprise. People complain about parking, but there's these vacancy rates. And part of the thing is that comes up with this is the city is essentially subsidizing parking because the rates on on-street parking that the city puts out are much lower, $2, $4, $2.50, whatever. You know, it's $10 in some of these lots. Mm-hmm. So let's open this up. Let's sort of even out the market.
So if I'm paying for a parking space – and when I leave in the morning, somebody else might be able to, can park there while I'm out at work, for example.
That's right. You can. The details need to be worked out, but essentially, you get an assigned spot, and that means essentially, I am guaranteed a spot in this comprehensive
somewhere.
Yes,
but I don't necessarily get a particular one.
That's correct.
Ah,
and one of the issues there is the exemption comes when you have an assigned, literally assigned spot, and they're trying to make it so that they can present data and show, look, there's openings all the time. That should count as an assigned spot.
I see.
Well, there's a lot of work with this public-private partnership idea for parking. There was that really fascinating report that was given on parking earlier this year to City Council where they pointed out these extremely high vacancy rates. And they talked about other services that have sort of started to do this. You know, there's these new, like, on-demand valet services. You know, or even think about Zipcars, right? There are Zipcar spots inside parking garages. And that's, you know, those are the Zipcar spots. And there's, like, four of them or whatever. And that's where you can come and go from. And utilizing these parking garages, which are extremely expensive, right? It's very expensive to build parking. It's something like, I think from the report, like $10,000 to build a parking spot,
right.
An underground parking spot per spot, right? So when you talk about why rents are going up, part of it is because we're building underground parking garages for all of these apartments and that's...
That aren't using the parking. It's
that,
an embedded cost.
It, yeah.
It's an embedded cost for a renter and they're not using it, the study shows.
And if you live in an apartment building where, you know, maybe it's $100 a month to have a spot in the garage, and if you don't pay that, you are still paying it because you're paying rent.
Correct.
On those kinds of things. And so this is a way to possibly offset some of that cost to put it towards other people. I love this idea of the shared parking garage. I think it's so smart, and I think it's a really clever solution for something that is a problem that faces a lot of people and also addresses a lot of issues.
Well, underreported no more. Thank you for bringing that to our attention. It's going to be a fascinating one to watch. Well, all right, Hannah, while we're at it, what is your underreported story? Switching gears a little bit for us.
Yeah, my underreported story is really sad this week. There was this woman, Stacey Davis, who was beaten to death under the Magnolia Bridge. And when the story first got reported, the big hook was that there was this police chase and there was a standoff and it was this really dramatic crime story. But the further that you look into it, you find that it was a homeless woman and her husband survived and she did not. And they were attacked by another homeless person. And I think what's being left out of the story is we are also actively addressing right now how to help homeless people in a really direct way with the encampments, right? And this happened in the Magnolia Bridge, very close to the proposed Inner Bay location and really close to the Ballard location, which has received tons of opposition from the neighborhood. And when we have people from neighborhoods like Ballard showing up at these town halls and yelling at each other that, you know, they really do want to help the homeless, but just not here, it's hard to listen to those complaints and then also see a mile away someone being murdered.
She makes a really good point when you say what we hear is people don't want these in their neighborhoods. And what we don't hear partially is the advocacy for it, in part because of the intimidating factor. If you went to those meetings in Ballard, there were homeless people at those meetings that wanted to speak and were scared to, and went up to the city representatives afterwards and said, I just want you to know I wanted to speak, but I was incredibly intimidated by the angry mob, essentially.
Right.
Interesting. And one just really quickly, Hannah, one additional sidebar on this story has to do with what happened after the tragic death of this woman and how her husband had to deal with getting her buried and interred. And
sure. Yeah. So Victim Services is going to help with the burial because for people who die outside and for homeless people, what happens to their remains is like really an ongoing sort of tragedy of just like unclaimed bodies and just a real lack of dignity. And so a viewer of the Como News story, which did feature the husband, Scott Davis, set up a GoFundMe campaign, which in the course of like 2 days raised $3,300, and you know, only, I think only like 80 people have donated, but they managed to raise $3,300. So like, it's high donations, which does speak to the fact that people really do care. And I think there is support, and I think there's concern, but I think it tends to get shouted down a lot.
Well, thank you for bringing it to the conversation today. Hannah Brooks Olson of Seattle-ish, Josh Feit of Seattle Met Magazine and Publicola, and Emily Parkhurst of the Puget Sound Business Journal. Thank you guys all for coming back on Sound Effect.
Thank you.
Thank you.